Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione, and we have Michael Jello. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Russell.
Well, I just want to say, just the same as Major League Baseball saying that the baseballs are less lively this year, and actually I have a stat. From June 25th, and I don't know if it's carried through July, there's been at least one player that's hit two-plus home runs every day, 27 straight days in Major League Baseball. And now, like, six in the Met game tonight. Aaron Judge has 30. I want to make a decree here, and I'm just going to say we are going to be as lively as the Major League Baseball baseballs.
Well, how appropriate that you're referring to juice baseballs, and I'm watching the Yankee game, and Ryan Braun is up.
It's just, you can't help the parallels. All right, so the three of us went to camps today, so I figured we'd just go round table a little bit just to talk about things we saw at camp that maybe we found interesting. I wrote some of my things on Sportsology, and I saw, Ant, that you were tweeting. And so, like, I first one that maybe didn't catch everybody's eye at Flyers camp was, I really liked the way the Flyers were working on guys sort of shooting off it's almost like a golfer shooting off a tee. They're shooting off a flat surface to kind of speed up their shot. Mm-hmm. And the first guy that I saw them make a really good difference with immediately was Connor Bunneman. And this is a guy who already scored 37 goals last year. So just imagine now when he's in the slot, if he's a half a second quicker, how many goals he might score this year?
No, it certainly was fascinating to actually watch that today and seeing. I was like, looking down, I was like, interesting. And there's always these interesting newer methods that are incorporated every single year in terms of getting, and at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to do, trying to develop. It's the whole point of these camps, developing skill, move things along a little bit quicker if there's a method to be able to do it. But absolutely, it was certainly an interesting thing to watch today.
And what did you see that you maybe enjoyed or scratched your head or, just looked at it and said, wow, that's kind of cool?
Well, we had a few other drills. There was a few other drills, obviously. A couple of the ones I've seen from Pashers, but still how it challenges a lot of the young players, the one-hand stick drill, where they're trying, again, they have to try to cut their circles. And with larger players that have been in this particular camp this year with the Isaac Radcliffe, the whole 6 foot thick, 6 foot, probably 6'9" or 6 on skates.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an easy drill for big guys or certainly a guy like Matt Strom as well to try to cut their circles a little bit tighter to try to be able to control the puck going around. But again, that's a drill that with some of the larger players that they had in camp this year, it's a little bit more of a challenge for them versus, let's say, a guy like, a little bit more like Morgan Frost. Although, again, Frost had his moments where I think he was maybe a little bit nervous today as well.
He was.
Being in his first camp. But for the most part, I thought that was, again, a fascinating drill. Of course, they also had the plastic shielding over the nets, the black shielding in front of the nets to emphasize, being a bit more, for accuracy in this circumstance, instead of having the old-fashioned dishes like we saw during the All-Star games. In this case, you had these precision drills, which, again, if you're a young player coming into camp for the first time, you're trying to impress, and if you're not hitting those targets, all of a sudden you start thinking, uh-oh. So in that circumstance, I thought those were some of the interesting things I saw today at Dana Voorhees.
I do want to say, if you hear some snoring, it's not Mike, it's my dog Kaya. She snores pretty loud. Go ahead, Mike.
I excite Kaya with my commentary all the time. Well, at Leaf camp, it's pretty similar in previous years, under the, the guidance of the in the Shanahan era. The first day or two, they emphasized skating drills. And boy, you can tell the difference between a player who really needs to work on his skating and somebody who is purported to be a great skater, like Timothy Liljegren, who they're going through the usual straight ahead go back type of drill, and also the skating backwards for half, and then turning around and skating forwards. And some of the big defensemen that the Leafs have drafted, and they have, I swear, they have enough to field an NBA team. They've got like five defensemen who are over 6'5". And some of them are not bad skaters, and some of them really need to work with Barb Underhill, and they really, if they're going to make the NHL, they're going to have to really improve on their skating. But Liljegren, I mean, he's just smooth, and it's natural. So I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to build up the strength, but the skating is there already.
Yeah, no question. All right, so the first roundtable question. We did talk about it a little bit during the week, but I haven't heard Ant's comments, so I'd like to, and we'll start with him. Obviously McDavid signs his deal, but my question to you, Ant, is now would you rush and give Leon Draisaitl a deal?
I would certainly move forward with it, but with some care in terms of how they've sort of structured their team at this point right now.
Yeah.
I know... the initial thing everybody immediately pops in their head is, is there going to be an offer sheet for Draisaitl? And I don't think that's going to happen, at least not this year. I think some of the reports are, I think they're coming. I think we will start seeing them as we get closer and closer to around the time in a year or so. I think there's a chance we may see it. Just don't see it necessarily yet with Draisaitl. In his circumstance, again, Edmonton's really sort of structured in interesting is probably a nice way of putting it. In terms of some of the contracts that they've doled out this summer, certainly Chris Russell coming to mind at 4 years and $4 million, and but in my mind, I want to make some form of progress with Draisaitl, because I think it's very evident to me that he is the Malkin to McDavid's Crosby. That he's a guy I think they're going to be able – that they're going to need to commit to. And they're also going to start considering, again, long-term what they're going to do financially with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in this circumstance if and when they get this Draisaitl finish. Again, depending on where they play Draisaitl too. But I think at this point right now, the long-term has to be probably pivot at second-line center behind McDavid.
Yeah, I think that will be the plan. Me, I'm more of a harder guy. I still would sign him to his first bridge deal. And then, and make it just a 2-year bridge deal. That's fine. He's still an RFA after that. And then if he proves it to me, that's fine. But then it gives me at least this year and maybe next year to try and add a lot of free agents and really see if I can get lucky and win a cup. Because after that, the cost is going to be like almost prohibitive. It's going to be very tough.
Well, the problem is not this year, because they have 16, a little under $17 million in cap space. So, they can sign Draisaitl this year, and it's not a problem. It's when the McDavid deal kicks in next year.
Yeah.
They're already at $52 million with 12 players for next year. And that, you just can't have that with Draisaitl probably getting what he deserves, or what they probably should try to do is get him locked up on a long-term deal. It's probably going to cost between $7 and $8
million.
Yeah. You can go short term. You can go bridge, but you're probably going to pay for it in the end, because look what happened with Subban a couple years ago. They went bridge, they got him cheap for 2 years, and then they got hit for $9 million, and that's the lesson you have to learn. You got to get them locked up.
Yeah, but you're going to get hit for $9 million anyhow, so you might as well. See, the thing where I think Edmonton's failed this year is they should have loaded up on 1 year free agents at a high cost to try and really get far in the playoffs, and they didn't seem to do that. They shouldn't have all this cap room. Like, having all this cap room this year doesn't make sense to me.
Well, they just signed Jussi Jokinen for $1.1 million, so there's your big-time free agent.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's ill-timed, and it does seem like the Leafs will do the opposite of Edmonton, which, again, because, everybody goes, well, Edmonton's doing this. This will change everything in the league, and it's like, but it's not. Other teams are not running and rushing to do this. This is just what their strategy is.
But the problem, Russ, between the Leafs and the Oilers right now is that the Leafs cleaned out most of their garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Oilers did was re-sign it. You know, and I'm not saying Ryan Nugent Hopkins is garbage, but the problem is when you're paying McDavid $12.5 million and you have to re-sign Draisaitl, you do not have room for a third line center and Ryan Nugent Hopkins making $6 million. Chiarelli's got to move him out, but I don't know if he's got the will or the, you know, or a destination that will take him at $6 million.
Yeah,
it's tough. Again, when you got 4 more years on that with that cap it for Nugent Hopkins, and you got to also have other teams that are willing to believe that, you know, in this circumstance, that they are willing to give you a good return in trade for him in this circumstance. I mean, you have to probably, we're getting to the point where obviously we're going to have to try to make salaries match. You know, they're going to want to have salaries somewhat come into play here and not necessarily completely match, but Edmonton, you know, that's one of the big things right now for if Edmonton's going to be able to make a deal in moving Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, that's a good question too. Like, it just seems like they waited so long for this that they can't possibly get value. And so I don't know. I don't know if they'll move him or not. So in other, like, awesome news, although I can't find any photographic evidence of this, Johnny Gaudreau was supposed to ride a horse today in the Calgary Stampede Parade. Oh, wait. I may have found it. Let's see. Yeah. I got to tell you, this is a short horse. Like, I've ridden a lot of horses. And I'm one of those guys that doesn't necessarily have to have a short horse, but I don't want one like 8 hands, like one that's massive, you know? This is a very short horse that Johnny Gaudreau is on. I'm going to retweet it now so people can see it at Sportsology. It's pretty funny. That's it, just a groan. That's all I get out of you. Whatever. You're dead to me.
Russ wants a pony. That's what I get out of this. Russ wants a pony. He doesn't have enough animals in the house. He wants a pony for the yard.
So I got some good gems today at camp. I'll write about them in the next couple of days from some Flyers guys, Wade Allison and from Tanner Lisinski. I think some, you know, little semi-scoops. I got those guys by themselves. But I did get some really funny stuff from Isaac Radcliffe and Matthew Strom. They were sitting next to each other. And I'll let one of them go now because, you know, the Flyers do this thing where they have the trial on the aisle and everybody goes and plays volleyball and they do, like, Iron Man stuff. And, you know, Radcliffe being 6'6", Strom being 6'3", they both told me that they play in front of, you know, that they're basically the net front presence guys. And they just, you know, slam it down. And so Strom said he thinks he could, you know, take care of Radcliffe. And Radcliffe said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I could take care of Strom in front of the net. But he said, if Strom comes at me hot, I don't know. I thought that was funny. Like,
that one.
Who comes, you weren't there, but like, who comes at someone hot in a volleyball game? Like, that was pretty funny.
He's watching Top Gun too much.
Yeah.
Coming in hot.
Yeah. So I thought that was, it showed a really a good sense of humor on Radcliffe. I enjoyed that.
Let's just say if they make Top Gun 2, we don't want to see Val Kilmer without his shirt this time.
No.
No.
There's a lot of things we don't want to see in Top Gun or even another Top Gun. But that's another discussion for another day. So anything else, Ant, that you saw that you thought was kind of cool?
Well, a few things. I got a chance to really kind of talk to Morgan Frost today in the locker room, just to kind of, because again, you're in a bit of a scrum and everything, and during the draft, and you know, Morgan obviously comes off, you know, very very polished, very poised. Certainly, as Mike can certainly speak to with regards to he's been around hockey his whole life, and certainly with his father's history with the Maple Leafs and everything. But I know you guys had talked to him, and I had not gotten to ask him sort of, you know, who he modeled his game after. And fascinatingly, you know, I don't know what my expectation was, but again, after I got past my initial sort of initial, I don't want to say surprise, but his mentioning of Minnesota's Michael Granlund, and now I, you know, looking at him, like, yeah, I can definitely see. And it really kind of, in my mind, kind of speaks to his maturity level in terms of the fact that this is a guy he says he's watched for several years now, physical body type very similar to one another in terms of, you know, over in terms of their stature and how they play. And again, Philadelphia ends up with a Michael Granlund on their hands. They'll be extremely happy, I think, in this circumstance. So that I thought was interesting. Certainly the conversation as well with German Rupstov today through translator Slava Kuznetsov, who's one of the skating coaches today. I asked about certainly the fact that they had been playing when Rupstov came over from, you know, from Russia and was playing for Chikudimi. They had him initially playing on the left wing, and I thought potentially that sort of experimenting.
Like an indicator. Yeah.
But it wasn't in this circumstance. It's just they loaded what they believe were their best players onto one line, and he just happened to be playing on the left wing, and now he's kind of alternated between the two positions. So again, while the Flyers are certainly loaded up in the system with centers, I wouldn't necessarily count out Rupstov as being one of those guys in the center mix, although I think there's a pretty good chance that he could swing out to the left side. So I thought those were the two between with Frost and with Rupstov that were interesting tidbits from today.
Yeah, there's one more thing that Mike could comment on that we heard that we were a little surprised when Nolan Patrick was in his press conference. He basically said that when asked about medicals, what teams thought.
And
he goes, well, the only teams that were, you know, really looking at me were New Jersey and Philly, and New Jersey really wasn't that interested in me. So
and they weren't interested. They weren't interested specifically in his much with regards to his medical, which for
but he
him
also made
it
seemed like interest.
He
made it seem like even like interest wasn't that high. He did.
Yeah, as if they were going in with the preconceived, you know, head mindset that they were going to be drafting Nico in the circumstance.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's no other way to sort of go around and say no, but and certainly both teams are going to be like, yeah, we got the exact guy we wanted, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to sort of hear Patrick kind of say that because it gives you a little bit of a window inside that we don't normally get in this case.
Right.
And that was something that was definitely unexpected and interesting, certainly.
Mike, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if there was an equivalent amount of interest on the part of New Jersey in Patrick as much as he shared, you would have thought that they would have gone through his medical records with a fine-tooth comb, but if they really didn't, then everything that we heard about them, you know, batting around Hischier and Patrick going back and forth was just all smokescreen by Ray Shiro, and they had their minds set on Hischier all along.
Yeah, and I, you know, getting back to Frost, I did want to say, like, just the same way that he shot, you know, in the middle and said, hey, he's like, wants to be like Michael Granlund, who I think's a heck of a player. When I started doing radio, I shot in the middle and said, I kind of want to be like Scott Farrell, but use my own voice. and I think I've done that.
Buy it out. Okay, well, Leafs camp was interesting in a couple respects. One, the amount of players that they brought, 57 players to camp. But the way they split them up is they had one group of 33 split into two different sections,
mm-hmm.
and they were doing mostly, you know, not drills, but mostly skate arounds and a few other things. And then the third group was most of their draft picks and a couple AHL players and guys I think they're taking more of a look at, and they did all drills. So it was a really large group of free agents. And if you look at the way the Leafs are structured right now, they have 48 players on pro contracts. Connor Brown makes 49.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think anybody from this free agent class, unless somebody just shocks them, is going to get signed because they just don't have the room right now until they make the trade, which I think they're going to probably make before the season starts.
Yeah, that is interesting. I also think that this is a plot by Lou Lamoureux to put like 100 guys on the ice so the Toronto media couldn't possibly write about everybody.
Oh, well, I mean, they're going to get an opportunity. I mean, I know, that was on the ice. Off the ice, I think the Toronto media is really hoping that in the next year or two, Jeremy Bracco makes the NHL because they will love him as an interview.
He's the best.
So he is so good. He is so funny. And even on the ice, he was really sort of loosey-goosey. He was playing rock, paper, scissors with one of the players before one of the drills. And he was yucking it up with Barb Underhill. He's just so loose, and he's got a lot of talent. So I think
he's a live wire. He is.
Yeah.
No question about that. And it is fun. I mean, that's a I think we're a year away. I think we're a year away from seeing Bracco. I do. I think, and that will be good. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Now, as we move further into the summer, and I'll just get your opinion. Like, Mike and I are pretty much in agreement at this point that right now we don't think Matt Duchene's going anywhere. Do you think he's going anywhere right now?
At this point, it's starting to get – it's getting to a certain level here where it's just like, if it isn't going to happen now, then it's going to probably be we probably get a little closer to the beginning of to training camp and preseason. Maybe around that time something shakes loose, but again, we think that, and then all of a sudden out of the blue a deal happens. You know, it's one of those strange things. But my gut is at this point that if it hasn't been done yet, he may be in limbo throughout the entire summer, and certainly, you know, and Sakic's going to have to deal with Pat Brisson in this circumstance, and I wish him all the luck in the world with regards to dealing with him over this right now, because it's very obvious that, you know, Matt Duchene wants out of Colorado, and they're just kind of – he's just being kind of held in limbo, and that they – you know, again, the other big question is going to be, we get to a certain point of the summer where is Sakic necessarily going to be the GM who actually makes the trade?
That's the
other thing we have to take into. But at this point now, much of the roster moves have all been kind of done. You would think kind of that if Sakic would lose his position, it would have to be probably sometime in the fall if the team's off to a real rough start at that point. But because they've already kind of set their table already, although they're still in neutral with regards to whatever they're going to be doing with Matt Duchene, if they're going to do anything, which you would think they're going to, but
you would think, but I don't know. All right, so here's a roundtable question, and I'll start with you. Where does Jaromír Jágr end up?
Ooh, I think he ends up somewhere up in Canada. I do. He hasn't played for a Canadian team yet. It may be a case where it gets a little bit closer to camp and everything. Wouldn't shock me if it's Montreal. Wouldn't stun me at all if it was there. Which again would probably, you know, just thrill Mike Argiello to no end. he'll be like, "Yes, good. They want to play. Keep playing slow. Go right ahead and keep playing slow.
Get slower.
They're not going to pick up their pace. Get slower. Play like you're in quicksand.
Find Brad Marsh and get slower."
So that's my prediction. I'm going to say Jágr ends up in Canada, and I got the gut feeling that it's going to be Montreal, but we'll see.
I'll go Canada, but I'll go the other coast because the Vancouver Canucks are a clueless organization.
That was my second option. They would be clueless
enough to sign Jaromír Jágr because they actually think they have a chance to make the playoffs. And, you know, that's a win-now move, even though he's 45 and really can't move anymore. They'll think, okay, you know, he put up points last year. Let's see if there's anything left in the tank. And, you know, I keep saying Vancouver should be rebuilding and not retooling, but they're not listening to me. They're adding Michael Delzato. They're adding Sam Gagne. They signed an expensive backup goaltender. They're acting like a team that's trying to contend for a Stanley Cup, and they're nowhere close. So, Jaromír Jágr, here I come.
I'm going to say Jaromír Jágr is going to end up on an episode of Beat Bobby Flay because apparently he's got this favorite mashed potatoes and chicken dish that he likes, and maybe he's going to cook that on national TV until someone calls for him. But
only if Giada De Laurentiis is one of the guest judges.
She could be. Who knows? On a serious note, I'm going to go New York Islanders. So that's who I think at the last minute they're going to look at their lineup and say, we need more scoring. We need more something.
That's going
to
play John Tavares.
And he has to finish the He has to finish the New York area trifecta. That is a good point. He's played well. He's played for the Devils. He's played for the Rangers.
Yep.
It's time to end the trifecta. That's true.
Yeah.
So I can see that. I'll put that as my number three behind Montreal and Vancouver.
All right. Now
Johnny T will be ready to sign that 8-year extension as soon as they ink Jagr. That's going to happen.
Now here's something. We brought this up on yesterday's Buzzcast, and I wanted to get your opinion on this because I couldn't find anywhere else where another guy had this situation. So Josh Bailey is the second leading scorer on the Islanders last year. He still does not have a contract going into next year. He could be a UFA. We don't hear any negotiations. Can you think of another team that's maybe their second leading scorer and he's been a long-term guy with a team, you know, a guy who came up in the organization who basically doesn't have a deal going into next year.
He left basically to flap in the wind until not one that's coming to mind.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been a situation or two where it has happened, but I'm at a loss to try to come up with an example, at least off the top of my head.
I think there's a guy named Stamkos in Tampa
but that's when you're talking about that kind of money, that's different. This is not big money.
No, it's not.
Surprising.
Yeah, no, it's not, but I mean, if you look at the Islanders, I mean, I know Bailey's put up some points in recent years. He's making $3.3 million right now, but this is a team that's paying Casey Zizekas and Cal Clutterbuck that amount.
I know, and that's what's crazy about this. It's like, look, and I'm not even the biggest Josh Bailey fan, but at the end of the day, not all these points are because of John Tavares, and he does play a decent all-around game. So at the end of the day, who are you bringing up? I mean, if you want to tell me Michael Dal Colle will take his spot, he might.
Mm.
But next year, you know, they're going to probably lose another player or two, and I just don't think they could afford to lose him. Now, it doesn't mean they will lose him, but I don't know. And he's also one of John Tavares' buddies. So I'm kind of thinking not having him re-sign doesn't really help the Tavares thing either.
He'll be joining Tavares wherever he's going.
He could be. I mean, that's – and so let's talk about that one for a minute, Ant. So John Tavares, I don't believe he'll re-sign this summer. It doesn't mean he's gone, but I don't think he's probably seen enough to re-sign.
Yeah.
I think in August they'll have some sort of meeting. I don't know if we'll ever hear anything out of that meeting, but I just have a feeling this is going to drag on for a while. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think there's going to be certainly some protracted discussions. We're going to hear some – I think we'll hear some things happen over the summer, but in terms of them actually sort of really moving seriously forward, in many ways, to me, the Tavares situation is going to mirror. We just mentioned his name, Steven. We just mentioned Stamkos. I think it may be one of the things where it literally goes down to a few days before he goes to market.
It could.
And maybe the Islanders are able to get that push in at the last second to get it done, or he takes his talents elsewhere in this circumstance. So again, I don't have a read here in terms of thinking that it's going to be happening this summer. I'd agree with him. If I'm looking at it, I'm going, what have the Islanders done, you know, in terms of putting a team around me? And they haven't really done much. In terms of really kind of putting those parts in place. I mean, yes, they made the trade for, they acquired Eberle. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Need a little bit more than just Jordan Eberle, and that's kind of where I stand with the Islanders right now.
Okay, Mike.
Well, they traded Eberle, and they traded for Eberle, and then they traded Hamonic. So
and Hamonic, and they don't even get the part that they needed in return. I mean, that's the thing. They didn't do. Yeah, congratulations, you got picks.
Yeah.
What does that do for the Islanders in the short term with Tavares? And we're assuming that, you know, they might have gone 1-1A with him and Duchesne, and that's not happening.
Well, you traded one of your top three defensemen, and granted, we know that the Islanders are deep on defense, and you got guys like Rock who could step in, but you know, you traded one of your top three defensemen in a league where a defenseman is so valuable right now that people are blowing their brains out to get them. I don't know what Garth Snow is doing. If he is under a budget, then he's pretty much screwed, because Tavares, I think, is going to ask for every red cent he can get out of that organization. If they don't upgrade, and if he stays, he's going to ask for more than McDavid. And if they, if they don't want to pay him, then he's going to go someplace else, and maybe he'll get that on the free market. But he could go someplace else, and if it's a place where he thinks he can win, he might take a more cost effective deal just for a chance to win a Stanley Cup. It's not out of the question.
So, I guess the question is, if he goes this far and nothing happens, are they at least able to trade his rights, or is he going to walk without any compensation?
Well,
nothing.
I think Anthony is right in the sense that he's playing the Stamkos playbook, and page two of the playbook is, as soon as the regular season gets done, he says, "I'm not talking contract until after the season is over with." That's when Garth Snow has to make his decision. I don't believe Tavares has the no-move clause that Stamkos had in Tampa, so Stamkos could control his fate. Garth can trade him, and if they can't get him signed and they're going to roll the dice and wait until next June, I would trade him, because I think if he goes that far, he's gone.
Yeah.
Just confirming it now. I'm on cap friendly, so I can confirm it with his deal. So...
yeah, I don't believe he has a no move.
No, he has a hit the brakes there. He has a modified NTC and
okay.
NFC in the last 2 years of his deal. The player has the clause details are the player submits an 18 no trade list.
But
so
it's certainly
not something that's overcomable if they want to move him. But it does limit options depending on what those 18s are.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I think that went under the radar. Like, nobody's really talking about it. I think it's kind of funny. Former Rangers goalie Magnus Hellberg signed with the Kunlun Red Star, you know, the Chinese team in the KHL.
They've got a few guys, Kunlun, with the investment that's been made recently. I think they've had some Western money coming in, certainly with Keenan being involved now with
Keenan,
them.
Keenan is the guy, and I do want to go over the roster. So you're like reading my mind. So on the roster, we do have Jesse Blacker, a former Maple Leaf.
Former Toronto Maple Leaf second round pick.
Yep, that was a good pick. Artis Kulda, who actually was a real star in the Memorial Cup. He's there. And that was a couple of years ago when I covered the Memorial Cup in London. I believe Kulda was like one of the best guys in the series. And so you have that. Let's see. Kyle Chipchura, former Canadiens captain.
Yep.
Oh.
Coyote.
Andre Kostitsyn, former Canadiens bad boy.
Oh, God, yes.
Mikhail Grabov.
Brothers.
They're
both brothers.
Player.
I don't see the other brother. No, not the other brother.
No, he's too busy drinking with Radulov in Texas right now.
Could be. Ethan Werick, former New York Ranger draft pick. He's there. Another former Ranger, Wojciech Wolski is there. Brandon Yip. I forget who he was a draft pick of. Let's see. I got to look up Brandon Yip.
Colorado for a while.
Colorado's. Yep, he was a Colorado draft pick.
Interesting thing about Wojciech Wolski, I know that, obviously with NHL players not going to the Olympics, Wolski is one of these players who may be playing for Team Canada in a pieced-together Team Canada in Pyeongchang.
Ah, that's an interesting one. And I'll leave you with this last one. This team has 5 goalies on the roster right now. 5.
What is it? Vegas Golden Knights?
This seems like a problem for Mike Keenan. I just got to say.
Do KHL rules allow for goalies to get warm-ups after this cold?
Maybe they'll put 2 in their net at a time. I'm not sure what they're doing here, but it's certainly interesting. And they do, by the way, because I know you were wondering this, and so was I, there is a Chinese player on this team, Rudy Ying, an 18-year-old. Let's look up his numbers. Rudy Ying played for the China under 18 team, which, again, I don't know who they played against. He played for the Connecticut Nighthawks in the METJHL. I'm not even sure what league that is. He had one goal. He played for Phillips Exeter Academy, which is a U.S. high school team, and in 14 games he had one assist. So I'm going to go out on a limb.
Sounds like a first-round pick to me.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he will not be the team's leading scorer, but he might be the most popular player.
As popular as Stefan Marbury in China?
I think more popular because he's a Chinese American.
Nobody can read Starbury.
No, he's a Chinese American. Actually, I met Stefan Marbury once, and the chain that he had on around his neck was maybe the biggest chain I had ever seen in my life, and he was wearing a Dwight Gooden jersey at the time. It was really funny. It was like, I got invited to this house party. It was like on a junket for a video game company, and I'm walking around, and you know the Lakers cheerleaders are there, and there's some other people, and all of a sudden, boom! I see Stephon Marbury, and he's wearing a Dwight Gooden jersey. I was like, wow! I said, I got to take a picture of this. That was a while ago, though. That was when he was still playing. Now he's now I think he's just making sneakers. But that's it. We've run out of hockey, although we'll be at rookie camp tomorrow, and I'll be at the 3-on-3 next week, and you'll be at the 3-on-3 next week for the Flyers,
yep.
And I'll be at the 3-on-3 for the Devils next week, unless New Jersey Transit stops running, which lately that's a possibility. But I'm planning on going.
And I'll be at the two blue and white scrimmages on Tuesday and Wednesday.
There you go. So, you know, the hockey never really stops in July. It does, though, in like a week. In a week, it just it totally stops dead. Like, then that's it. It's the end of the line. And we got nothing.
Yep. We've run out. Out of gas.
That's it. And that's it. We want to thank everybody for tuning in this year. And
we sputtered to a stop.
We did.
Six is out of gas. We have no fuel. Abandoned ship.
We were like
Mayday.
We were like a Tesla that charged up, and then we went like 102 miles. You know, like
that's it. A bridge too far.
That's where we're at. We thank everybody for tuning in this year, and we'll certainly be around next year, and hoping that we'll have a few more people. Why not?
You never know. Exactly. Take care, everybody. Have a great summer.
Buenas noches.